writing.
Welcome to PDGA Radio. Grant Zellner, Jennifer Allen, and a special guest today coming to us from Germany, Berlin, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Johannes Kropf. And I know I just Americanized your name, Johannes, so forgive me. We've got you here, and we're so thrilled to have you with us.
No, you did a great job on my name, I must say. Like, nearly no accent at all.
You put the Kropf, you put the R back in the mouth, right? Something like that?
Yeah, it's Kropf, but there you go. Were pretty close. No, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm actually one of your regular listeners.
Very good.
Oh, thanks. Well, you're the one there over in Germany. Great. That's great. That's great to hear.
I can do some advertisement. We might get you like 10 or 20 by the end of the month.
We'll have you tag us on your social media, which is actually the way that we found out about you and connected. And a lot of our listeners, they may not be putting the name with the face right now, but you are the individual who posts a lot of short form videos on your Instagram, and then they manage to float around and get shared. But you play in a wheelchair. And the most recent video that prompted me to call you, it can't be very old. I saw it last week or so, a week or two ago. It's you playing at a local course for you, talking about you're playing a hole that normally you don't get to play, but they've made some changes to the course. And now you can make it all the way from the tee to the basket. You used to have to skip the hole, I guess, and now you don't have to. So it's a really cool story. And that just made me think there's a much bigger story here. A great thing to tell for all disc golfers, but especially adaptive disc golfers. So let's just start at the beginning for you and your life's journey that eventually led you into pursuing disc golf.
Yeah, we can do that. So my disc golf journey didn't start till about 4 or 5 years ago. You could think that I'm a pandemic disc golfer, but I had known about disc golf long before that. I had a climbing accident 10 years ago, which is why I'm a wheelchair user now. I'm a paraplegic. And I really used to, like, I worked at a bouldering gym. I was a root setter. I was like a trainer and stuff. But we had people come into the climbing gym, like probably like 14, 15 years ago, that had those like funny frisbees with them. And that's like my first contact point to like disc golf. Oh, that's a strange looking, like, I've never seen a frisbee like this. Like, it looks sleek, fast, like interesting, like way cooler, better plastic than like the Ultimate or Beach Catch discs that I knew. And I always wanted to try it, but like life gets in the way and I never got around to do it because especially back then there were no courses here at all. And after my accident, I had to stop climbing, and I still kept up the training part and like did a lot of like functional fitness stuff, but I was kind of missing that mental aspect to the sport, like having a sport where you're like on like when you're climbing, when you're bouldering, you have that, like, you have to figure out the route and you really have to think about it, like how you're going to do it, make a plan and stuff. And I was really missing that when I was only doing fitness as a sport. And then like 4 or 5 years ago, like a guy popped up on my TikTok feed pretty randomly, who was like just reuniting with his old college mates, and they met up once a year to play disc golf. Like, so he wasn't even like a professional disc golfer or anything. He was just like a normal dude who like plays a couple of rounds a year, happened to put that one on TikTok. And I pretty much, oh yeah, that's disc golf. I've heard about it. And I went out the same week, got a starter set, and really didn't look back. So that's like the very abbreviated version of how I ended up being like now nearly full-time disc golfer.
A nearly full-time disc golfer. You've had to invent your own path in disc golf. I can't imagine, you know, I've seen adaptive lessons just from people in my life that utilize wheelchairs or other forms of crutches where they've learn how to play versions of sports that have some adaptive qualities to them. And there's some different techniques and things that they use. But in your case, there can't have been a whole lot of instructional videos, how to throw a disc from a seated position. You've had to invent that yourself. What's that been like?
When I started playing, of course, I like first went to YouTube and Instagram and stuff and started looking up like wheelchair disc golf, Adeptus disc golf, trying to find stuff. And there was nothing. Like on Instagram, there was really nothing. On YouTube, there were like two or three random videos, but they were of people who were throwing for the first time themselves. So they didn't really know what they were doing. So I didn't actually go play a course for the first few months I was playing. I just went out to a field that is close to me to just figure out the basic mechanics and just tried out what will work. Like I basically started from zero, like how I'm like, I have a dog and I throw frisbees for him sometimes, like a lot more when he was younger. So I just started with that form, which was like pretty much only wrist and like how he would throw a catch disc kind of like for like maybe like 50 feet or something, and just went from there and just tried what will work. Like, how can I actually get distance? Like, how can I emulate a standing form from being seated? And yeah, took me like over a year till I arrived at the form I have now.
Did you
like close to that? Like, I'm still tweaking a lot on that one too.
Did you find it was easier to maybe change what style of disc or the weight of the disc versus form? You know, do you throw more understable disc or lighter weight disc to get a little more glide, since you can't engage your legs and hips as much as someone who is standing?
Now I do, but at the beginning I fell into the very same trap that every disc golfer falls into, which is like, I went online, like I want to throw far, what do I have to do? And I got like 12 speeds, which didn't work out great.
Yeah.
But over the years, I found out that the sweet spot for me is really like somewhere in the fairway to maybe 9 speed range and probably under 170 grams. Mm-hmm. Like I really don't throw anything full weight that is up in like, I throw full weight mid ranges and putters, yeah. But like as soon as it gets to like fairway distance driver speed, I throw lighter and lighter weights.
Have you found?
And yeah, understable. I don't know. It's hard to, because flight numbers are not a real science. So it's some discs just work, some don't.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I couldn't tell you a flight number. I have to get out and throw it. So you're not alone on that one. Or even like, you know, you said you started out with catch frisbees. Have you tried like the Polecat or, you know, the Sonic, some of the more catch frisbees that will just kind of catch air and glide straight for you, so you don't have to worry so much of the left to right?
I should have when I started out. I think now my form is so much because I apart from throwing like a dog frisbee, I didn't really play any disc sports ever in my life. Like I never played any ultimate or like really threw distance shots with like catch discs. So my form is like a pretty pure disc golf form that I have now. So I actually have trouble throwing a ultimate disc now because I'm like so used to like ripping on like fairways and stuff that it's like, it's something I'm trying to get back for my short backhand approaches to get that like catch form and like, but actually like my form is pretty much like purely disc golf now. So I get about like 260 feet of distance at the long end now from being seated, and that's with I filmed my longest throw on video a few weeks ago, and that was with a Roadrunner.
Nice.
And I threw that one 81 meters, which is like somewhere around 260 mm-hmm. feet.
Is there, what would be the greatest advice if someone was to look up to you or reach out to you on how to get started, besides some of the lower maybe speed disc? Would you tell them maybe to try to adapt their form, or just to do what you did and just try to change maybe the disc more than your form? What do you think would be more helpful?
I think it's a balance of both. Mm-hmm. I would definitely, like, that's one of the reasons why I produce so much content or regular content on social media, mostly on Instagram. Is that I want the next adaptive player who starts playing, I want him to be able to find stuff. Like if you look up the hashtags like adaptive disc golf, wheelchair disc golf, you're going to find a like couple mm-hmm. of hundred posts from me. And that will give you like a head start of about like half a year compared to what I had. But I think the form I have now is something that is like a good base for other people starting to play from a wheelchair. And I've also like found a couple of other adaptive mm-hmm. players by now. Like one of them is from Sweden that I'm in regular contact with. And he pretty much, like, that's why I feel comfortable that my form is something that's a good base for now, is that we came to pretty much the same form independently. No, but definitely. Like, I think there's not much that much difference when it comes to beginners for, like, adaptive players and, like, normal disc golfers. Like, just buy mid-ranges, like, neutral to understable mid-ranges at the start. Just don't go for that allure that distance drivers have. They're not going to make you throw farther in the beginning.
What's your favorite course over there? And have you traveled outside of Germany much to play? Or do you mainly just kind of play around locally?
No. I haven't traveled outside of Germany for disc golf. I've played a fair share of courses up in the northern part of Germany. Because the northern part of Germany is the part that's flatter. Because that's something that's definitely an issue as a wheelchair disc golfer, is like if you get into like mountainous regions, like you're just not going to be able to play the courses very well. Because those, like, as soon as you get like slopes that are too steep or something, it's going to be a real struggle. So that's why I try to stay in the flat parts of the country. I always think, like, when I look at the Pro Tour courses, I always think like Kansas would be pretty good for me because it's flat. But unfortunately, those courses are also tend to be the long yes. ones.
Yeah. Pros and cons for sure.
Yeah. No, but like my favorite course in my region that I've played is, I actually played a C tier at that course last weekend. It's called Finsterwalde, is what the city is called. I don't know that the course, like, it's just a course at Finsterwalde. It doesn't have its own name, really. But that one is kind of a very nice mix of like wooded holds and like longer open holds. And it's just a very, very green, very nice. And just that it's a very nice mix of like both. You get like those like really tight wooded fairways, and you get those like open fairways that are, and you have like, as it's like in a flat part of the country, like it's really accessible to that course.
I'm curious, since we're talking about courses, to your point, if a course is in a mountainous region, there's not a lot maybe that a course designer can do to try to make it more adaptive, because, you know, you can't flatten the mountain. But if a course is on a piece of property where it could be more accessible, from your experience, what are things that course designers could do, or maybe could do a better job of, to make their course more accessible to wheelchairs or to others that maybe have a hard time going up and down slopes? What has your experience taught you about that?
I think it's the small things that make the biggest difference. Because you can go a long way if you like intentionally design, because often it's like not the lot of courses, the parts that make it not accessible are not like big things, like there's like a cliff face or something, but it's like things like, oh, there's like two bridges on the property. Those bridges have steps mm-hmm. at the beginning. Like that's easily avoidable. Mm-hmm. You have T-pads maybe, and those T-pads are like raised like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 inches off the ground. Could you maybe build them so they're only like 1 inch off the ground? It's like the small things, like making paths wide enough. Because those are all things that's also going to make it easier for people that, for example, like families who play disc golf, who are going to go out there and have like their stroller with them, with their 2-year-old in it, something, they also going to appreciate those small changes. So I think it's not about making your course 100% accessible. I think it's about intentionally trying not to build barriers that don't have to be there. Right.
That's an interesting perspective. I was just thinking through, just in the lead up to talking to you today, I was thinking through courses in my area, and several of them, you might have to omit a hole or two that's just unavoidable, but the vast majority of the course, 12, 14, 16 holes, would be playable. But to your point, there would have to be some attention paid to, in our case, a lot of erosion around the concrete tee pads makes a pad that maybe once was flush with the ground, which would be good for you. Now that tee pad is 4, 5, 6 inches of a drop off all the way around it. granted, you could tee off next to it, I suppose, but that none of those things are ideal, and they don't show the kind of care I think that ought to be paid to some of these details.
That's also like I was talking to the people at UDisc last year because they want to add some accessibility features to the course directory.
Mm.
And part of that was maybe giving the possibilities to course ambassadors or like the people caring for the course on UDisc to put in accessible layouts. So like exactly like if you can only play like 14 out of the 18 holes, the possibility to like put in a special like wheelchair layout on UDisc that like when you put on that filter, you're only going to get shown that layout that you can actually play and stuff. Because I think like putting features in like that is not just great for wheelchair users or other people with like mobility needs to find courses that are accessible. But as soon as the people building courses have more exposure to the idea that there could be something like accessibility, like it's going to get them thinking like, oh, they are like UDisc is asking me, how accessible are you? Do you have an accessible layout or something? It might like trigger something for them to put in the effort to maybe at least make a certain amount of their course more accessible. So I think that's another big reason for me being present as much as I am on social media, to just get that seed into the mind of people. So like maybe the next time they like plan stuff, make decisions, they're going to think about that aspect of the game too.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something that isn't done on purpose. It's something that's accidentally overlooked because we don't see a ton. There are several in America that, you know, do play in their wheelchairs, and we occasionally get to see the incredible videos of that. But it's just something that kind of gets pushed back and not on the upfront, you know, because there's so many things that are already like top priority. That's just something that isn't quite as top priority and gets overlooked accidentally. And so players like you who can get out there, like you said, and just spotlight it so we can be like, oh my gosh, it wouldn't take but 5 extra minutes to make this 2 inches wider along the fairway in the path to make it more accessible to everyone. And for you just yeah. having just a search engine, you know, for anyone who needs that availability, you know, that saves so much time and stress on trying to get out to courses and see, you know, you don't want to get 7 holes in and realize now I'm stuck and there's no way for me except for to turn around and go all the way back on a course. So having someone already go out there that can access and show, okay, you know, 95% of this course is accessible, or if you do come to this course, you know, maybe knowing which ones are easier for you to play without the hassle of, you know, getting stuck out on a course and having to backtrack. So having UDisc or any other kind of search engines like that, you know, do that work in advance for anyone who is in a wheelchair or any other kind of disabilities, that would be amazing for you to save that time and effort out there.
Yeah. I think it's a lot about, like, I don't think anybody, like, on purpose makes their mm-hmm. course inaccessible.
No.
It's just something that people don't have in their mind when they build courses.
Yeah.
And especially for, like, I don't ask it for, like, proto courses or anything. That's a thing. I'm totally fine with the idea not all courses can be accessible or should be accessible because it would also take away of the potential for some of the courses if they were made accessible for like any price. But I just see so many courses that have the potential without a lot of effort. And I, mm-hmm. those are the ones I'm like hoping for that they are going to be more accessible.
They're close. They're really, really close. And with just a little bit of attention.
Yeah.
This episode of PDGA Radio brought to you by Gravity Disc Golf. And with us today, Alden Harris, a member of the Gravity Disc Golf team. Alden, thanks for being here. What can you tell us about Gravity Disc Golf?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Gravity Disc Golf is an amazing retail store. They're kind of based in my area. They're about an hour and a half north of me in Dalton, and they have an amazing online retail store too.
GravityDiscGolf.com is where you can find apparel, discs, and other equipment, all brands represented. Alden, I want to ask you about one thing I found a little bit unique. It looks like you can buy used discs online. I've seen that before, but not a lot. that's one of several unique elements about Gravity, yeah?
Yeah, when I started playing, I mean, that's something I would have killed to have, an online retail store having like the option to buy used discs. So that's super cool they do that.
I'm seeing a lot of great apparel too, really interesting designs. I see it on your hat today as well. How does that stuff perform on the course? We know it looks great, but how does it do for you there on the road?
Yeah, so something I've always lived by is if it looks cool, it does good. It works well. But one of the cool things about Gravity is, you know, I'm still new to the team, but I've heard about Gravity because they're kind of in my area for years now. And every time I saw something with their logo, I always just thought it was the coolest looking thing. So to be a part of it is so cool now, to be a part of that creative process.
Now, Alden, I'll be honest, I see disc golfers on the road all the time in the course of my job. I honestly think I've seen your van more than anybody else's. It seems like you are everywhere. You've already got a strong personal brand. Now you've aligned your personal brand with Gravity Disc Golf. What kinds of things do you share? What made this a great fit for you?
Yeah, I mean, kind of what I just said, just their stuff is so cool looking to me. I feel like it fits my personality really well. I love all things space and like galaxies and stars and all this. So I don't know. I think our style is very similar.
Well, when you look good, you tend to play good. At least it's something off your mind, worrying about how you look on any given day. Alden, you look great on the course. You're playing great as well. Obviously, this partnership between you and Gravity Disc Golf is beneficial. So we want that kind of partnership to be beneficial for others. What can people do if they want to follow along with Gravity Disc Golf?
Yeah, well, you can go to the website, gravitydiscgolf.com. You can also go to their social media. They're on all social medias. Yeah, it's a great way to kind of keep track of what we're doing. We got some big things in the work. So, yeah.
Well, and PDGA Radio appreciates the sponsorship of organizations like Gravity Disc Golf. So Alden Harris, thanks so much for joining us today and telling us about this awesome disc golf company.
Thanks for having me.
Here's another thing I was curious about in the lead up to talking to you today is the creative solutions that you've had to come up with in terms of have you had to modify your chair in a certain way because you found that if you threw a certain type of shot, you were out of balance. And so you came up with a way to modify it. Or another thought I had was being able to get at your disc if it's in an unusual place or maybe an elevated basket and being able to get at it. Have you had to come up with some creative inventions to make the game work for you? And if so, what are those?
I was actually very well prepared for the disc golf course before I even started playing, but that's because I've had a dog for like nearly 10 years now. And I was venturing, like going a lot to the forest before that. So I'd already done like all the adaptations to my wheelchair just to be able to go to the forest with my dog. And that way it wasn't a big change to go, like instead of going on a dog run, let's go play a round of disc golf. Like there's not much different of what you need from your wheelchair for either of those activities. But the modification I had done because of that, just to be more off-road mobile, I guess, I've been using thicker tires, like mountain bike tires for a long while when I'm out on looser ground. And I also have something that's very uncommon in America for some reason. There's one company in America which builds something like it. It's called the Free Wheel, which is like a front wheel attachment. Like you see it in my videos that I have that wheel on the front, which is just an attachment I can take off my wheelchair. Like it's not permanently on there. And that one actually, like, what it does, it lifts off the two small caster wheels. So you're only driving on the back, two big back wheels and the big front wheel, and that makes you a lot more off-road capable. And that's like in Germany alone, we have like four or five companies who make attachments like that, like front wheel attachments. And they're, I think it's a little bit of a different approach that American disability equipment companies take to European ones. Because in America, when they think, oh, wheelchair users should be able to go like into the forest or like go hiking or stuff, they always come to the solution that they're gonna just put motors and like build some kind of like tank-like off-road wheelchair huge thing that you would need a truck to carry around. While in Europe, you will see when it comes to that, you will see a lot more of like front wheel attachment, hand bike, like adaptive hand bikes kind of stuff, and a lot smaller items to become off-road capable. So it's very funny that it's like there's a culturally different approach to how to be like outdoors with a wheelchair from like Europe to America.
And like you said, the tank style versus, is yours more of a lightweight wheelchair that is easier to move?
Yeah, because like I, for example, the tournament I went to last weekend, which is like about 2 hours from here, I went there by train. Like I went there by public transport. Like I just packed my backpack and like for the day. And that's how a lot of us get to tournaments. Mm-hmm. Like we like probably only like half the people would ever take a car to go to a tournament that's like in a 2-3 hour radius. There's like, we have pretty good public transport here. So you would just take the train to a tournament, and you couldn't do that with like a big off-road electric wheelchair thing.
Do you also use the handy dandy reacher that we give all patients who need you know, just surgical patients who don't need to break their precautions, but they're wonderful pieces of equipment that make getting things easy, you know. Do you have a reacher in Germany as well?
No. I don't use one personally.
He's got a dog.
I trained him not to go after this. It took a while. No, what I use a retriever to get it, because you asked before, Grant, how do I get my disc if they're in a spot that I just can't get to? And I will use a retriever for that, but I actually most of the time don't use one of the commercially available ones, because the problem with the disc golf retrievers you can buy is they're made for not using them too often and mostly using them to get something out of the water. So they are very useful with that. But if you use them a lot and often also for like short stuff, just to get stuff out of a bush or something, like even that double hook and stuff like that, it's not very useful for that. So I actually started building my own retrievers a couple of years ago. Like you can get those telescoping poles from like eBay and stuff. And I would just put a simple metal hook, like just a single one on it, because that works a lot better to get like discs out of the underbrush than one of the ones you can buy. Actually, mostly nowadays I only carry like a 2.5 meter long retriever. I don't know, what's that, like probably like 7 feet, 8 feet long retriever, because that's mostly enough for me to get my discs out of like a bush or something, like someplace I can't get
to. We have several companies over here. Some make the gator, the pincher, the grabber, or now we have some of the sticky balls that are on, so you can just kind of hit it and stick. Have you seen any of those over there?
Yeah, I've actually Jesse from Trash Panda sent me, he did a video about like disc golf inventions, and he, in that video, he also tried the suction cup ball retriever. And as he didn't need it, because there's not that much water hazards in Colorado, he sent it to me afterwards. And I tried it for a while, but it's like we have very loose, sandy kind of dirt. And that doesn't combine very well with the suction cup. Like it just doesn't hold. Like it's great to get stuff out. Like it's probably the best thing ever to get stuff out of water, but it's really not that great to get stuff like out of a bush in a sandy ground or something.
Well, here's what you do. Take your design, send it to America. We'll find a way to put a motor on it, because clearly that's what we do for everything else. We'll put we've put motors on ice chests, and we've put motors on all kinds of things, but we'll put a motor on a disc golf retriever.
No, it's like, actually, that's something I would love as an invention, would be like a robo caddy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, those, like in some American towns, there's now those delivery robots which drive around, something like that, but as like off-road capable as a caddy, that just like that would also be cool for like normal players.
Absolutely.
Just have your little robot buddy coming behind you with the disc and like a built-in cooler.
That also is starting to sound like a very American kind of thing.
We do have, there are a few of the, well, it's seen a lot more in ball golf, but I have seen a few on the disc golf course where they are motorized and controlled. Maybe, you know, and I believe the gentleman who tried to use it at D-Glow had to get a PDGA, you know, certification or approval to use the motorized cart. But those are, you know, just things that unless it's brought up, you don't know if it's legal or not, or can be done or can't be done.
Yeah.
What about other rules that may come into play during, like you said, you just played a sanctioned event. Have they adjusted anything for you during tournaments? Like, you know, closeness to your lie or, you know, things like that. Like, do you try to get the front of your chair towards your lie, or do you turn sideways to get more closer laterally to your lie towards the basket? What have you found that works best? And has anyone asked you, you know, about changing rules or anything like that for you during events?
So that's actually something I started thinking about very early on in my disc golf career, kind of. How would the rules apply to me and stuff? And they do, like a normal play, they would apply 100% and would make it impossible for me to play. So the PDGA has something for that, which works on a small scale, which is called a medical exemption. Mm-hmm. Like I have to do every year, I have to apply for a medical rule exemption with a PDGA medical committee to even be allowed to play in a wheelchair in sanctioned tournaments. They have now kind of formalized this a little bit with the Appendix F, which came out last year, which like goes into the whole topic of playing with a weird disc golf with a wheelchair, but only applies to like X tiers, mm-hmm. like wheelchair only events, yeah. kind of, and not like to normal sanctioned plays. But now I get kind of the same rules that are in that appendix with my medical exemption. And right now they state that like, yeah, you get a little bit of an extension on what is the permissible mm-hmm. lie. So you get like 2 meters of space behind your disc in the line of play as your regular stance. And you get, I think, up to 5 meters of relief if you can't get to your lie because of the wheelchair without a stroke. It's also defining like, yeah, it's your wheel that counts as your like furthest forward point of contact, kind of stuff like that. It goes into quite a lot of detail, but there's problems with that. Like I've written to the PDGA long before there was an Appendix F. I had written to the PDGA rule committee about wheelchair rules and offered my advice, which didn't work out for different reasons with them. And I also didn't have like the reach I had back then. I didn't have the voice I have now. But the problem with the rules as they are right now was like they stick to the line of play, mm-hmm. which there's a lot of situations, especially on courses that have out of bounds, where with the current wheelchair rules and exemptions I have, I can never get to a playable lie. Yeah. Like imagine you have, for example, an island hole. There is a bush on the island. So the bush is, and there's no space between the out of bounds line and the bush for me to take a stance. And my disc lands in the bush with the roots right now. The roots state I should like take relief till I have a stance, but it's impossible because then I'd be standing in out of bounds.
Doesn't say you can go and laterally.
Like, there's a lot of that's like, that would be my, like in the long term, I think we are not going to get around getting like at least for adaptive disc golf, we're going to have to abandon the line of mm-hmm. play for relief and take like the closest lie that has the same or further distance as a rule. So you kind of have like the basket in the center and you like have your lie and you use that to like draw a circle and you take your relief on that, on the closest point on the radius of the circle.
Right. And I would feel like, you know, that's just adding one more level to that rule that's already there and just making that adjustment. If there is no accessibility directly behind lie, you know, then. So it's I think like just like the courses not really being aware, you know, not trying to purposely make something difficult, but just not fully being aware. And personally, it made me, when you said that, just remember back when I was in school for learning how to help teach patients how to use adaptive equipment. They made us get in wheelchairs and go around the entire college and go in and out of the bathroom and go try to wash your hands and go try to you know, open the door to a classroom, which is very, very heavy. And, you know, maybe it's something like, you know, if we continue to grow this sport and try to make it accessible to everyone out there, maybe we need to throw some of those rules officials in a wheelchair and put them out on a course. And it's very, very eye-opening what people have to overcome to do something that, unless you're put in that situation, you just fully do not, you're not aware of what it's like. So I think my advice would be to continue to approach and to push those subjects and get others out there in with you. And maybe that's something we can get out and do on a course and make everyone a little more aware of the challenges that you have to overcome.
Yeah. I think that's what it's going to take. Like, it's going to take more wheelchair players to like just bring up those issues. Right now we kind of have that like hen and egg problem, like where there's not many accessible courses. There's not much knowledge in the, like the disabled community about the possibilities to play disc golf out of a wheelchair. And that's also why we don't have more wheelchair players. Mm-hmm. So we need to like create the possibilities for people to play in wheelchairs, even so they are not there yet. So that they will even start, so that they can start playing sometime, and then there will be more players. Like, it's always the argument, yeah, there's not many wheelchair disc golfers. Why do we need to like make our like routes accessible or like our courses accessible?
Doesn't matter.
But yeah, there's not many wheelchair users because the courses are not accessible.
Right. Do you feel like disc golf is a sport that can easily be done by any player who is in a wheelchair?
I think so, because there, especially in America, there's a lot more like very short courses, mm-hmm. like pitch and putt style courses. I think especially those are like really could be played by anybody, like even like people in like electric wheelchairs. You just have to be creative on how you're gonna play it. I think the PGA did the Appendix F that came out last year got put into place because of the cooperation that there is with, I think, the Veteran Game or the Invictus Games, like one of the Veteran Games. And they demonstrated that, like, if you build, like, they are building, that's also the reason why the rules quickly get to, like, their boundaries if you play on a real course, is because they made that appendix in cooperation with the Veteran Games, and they build special courses for the competition because it's mostly people who've never played mm-hmm. before. So they just set up like a temporary course on like a parking lot or like on a little piece of grass or something. So they never, like when they came up with that version of the routes that is in the appendix right now, they were working on the basis of like the courses they had and like how they had implemented disc golf at the Veteran Games. And the routes work perfectly for that. It's just like when you take them out of that context, they mm-hmm. kind of fall apart.
Right.
But I think that like what they did at the Veteran Games and stuff like demonstrates like disc golf really can work for like all levels of ability.
And it's something just like everyone else who takes up disc golf. It's something that you can go out and play by yourself. You can go out with friends. It's just something to get you outside, you know, whether it's personal time or having fun. It's disc golf is that game that everyone can fall in love with and gives you something to get out and that you enjoy to do and can feel successful with. And so we definitely need to kind of just open our eyes here and there a little more and make it accessible for everyone.
Yeah. And I think it's also about like just making like communities like to take a loop back to the start where Gren talked about like how my community made it possible for me play the hole. I think that's like the, mm-hmm. the strongest part of us as disc golf as a sport is that we have such a strong community. Yes. And I think we just need to reflect more on what it means to be a disc golfer and what it means to be a welcoming disc golfer to everybody. And then just like do our best as a community to like actually welcome everybody. Yep. And not just like always like repeat it like a mantra, but like don't actually live that part.
Like you said, I think it just takes that extra moment of pause to look around and consider a little bit bigger picture. you know, again, I'm going back to local courses in my area and I'm going, wow, with a couple of hours of a little group doing work, you know, a course in my area called Will Rogers, for example, would probably be almost entirely, all 18 holes would probably be fully accessible, but it would take a few minutes of just opening your eyes and thinking to yourself, can a wheelchair go over that mound? Can a wheelchair go over that creek? Can a wheelchair get up and down that curb? Can a person in a wheelchair reach their disc if it goes in this area? If they can't, maybe that area should be declared out of bounds, or maybe that area should be declared some kind of a relief area. You know what I mean? Just little thoughts here and there. I feel like maybe that's a big barrier that we can tell people that are listening right now. The barrier is not necessarily an expensive barrier. It's not necessarily one of having to build a lot. It's just one of having to look around and recognize a couple of things. And that's the hardest part.
Yeah, and I think like small steps go a long way. And like accessible design, like just in general, not just like on disc golf courses, but in general, like mostly makes life easier for everybody involved. Like even for the people who are like, you have that like 65-year-old player who like uses a cart because he can't carry his like a disc golf bag. He struggles too if he has to pull that cart up like two stairs or something. Like, so just like it, I don't think there's any negatives to just seeing like how much can we do with little effort. Right. Like, because small steps often help a lot.
Absolutely.
Jen, I think I saw a video not that long ago of a disc golf course that's on a ski mountain. So of course, in the summer when there's no snow, you can play disc golf, and someone turned on one of the lifts. It was a ground lift. And then they set their bag on the ground lift and they said, oh, look, this course has a bag lift for us, which of course was silly. They were just being silly. But hey, I mean, if an idea like that works in your area and you've got a course and you want to make it more adaptive friendly, hey, maybe once again, here we are in America putting motors on it.
No, I'm gonna get back to those motors when I'm a little older. I just think like as long as I'm fit enough to like go around like play my like 36 holes of competition with just manual power, I will keep on doing that. But I see a point in my future where I will need some kind of motorized attachment at least for my wheelchair.
Right.
Because like my shoulders, like I wanna play till I'm like 60, 70 at least, so I definitely see myself like as a 70-year-old disc golfer, just like cruising around, like razzing the young kids, how slow they are in my electric wheelchair.
Definitely. Cause you're using so many more muscles, you know, wearing out and fatiguing your upper body, which is all what you're using to throw the disc. So having that is, I do not think, making it unfair for anyone else.
I actually notice that a lot when I play like two round tournaments, which have two rounds on the same day, as I use like the same upper body muscles for going around the course that I use for throwing. If I play longer courses, I will notice that my distance dips by like 20% by the end of the day.
Wow.
Like I just get like heavy arms and I just don't throw nearly as far as I throw at the start of the day.
Do you find that forehand or backhand is easier or equally the same kind of challenge in a chair?
I think it, for me, backhand works a lot better, but I never played a ball throwing sport my whole life. So it's not a very natural motion for me. It's not a motion I'm used to throwing a ball. So like backhand just came very natural to me. Like they felt right straight away. Like I could throw them like over 50 meters pretty early on. Forehands, I've played around with Scott Stokely and I made him play in a wheelchair.
Good for you.
Oh, wow. How
cool. I'm sure he loved that experience.
And that was easy. Like I was throwing like a lot more distance backhand and he was throwing backhand out of the chair, but like forehand, like he was like bombing.
His forehand's incredible. Like
300.
Yeah.
Yeah. He throws 300 feet drives from being in a wheelchair.
That's amazing.
With his forehand. Yeah. And he also, like, the most impressive part of Scott Stokely's wheelchair disc golf game is actually his forehand rollers. Like, you haven't seen a forehand roller until you've seen Scott Stokely, like, from being seated down, throwing, like, a 350-foot forehand roller that, like, just goes straight like a laser and drops like 2 feet besides a pin.
Yeah, he's very talented.
And you feel it makes you feel very bad about your game.
Don't feel bad at all. He's been doing that for a very long time. So he
is any of this on camera?
I'm sure Scott probably
no, we did a live stream of it, but unfortunately that quality of that live stream was so bad that you can't really see anything. Yeah. There's one reel, like if you scroll down on my feed, there's one reel last year where we play a hole together, but we both, I think he throws a forehand, I throw a backhand. I got the CTP on that one.
All right. Well done. Hey, I mean, it feels like the conversation's kind of winding down, and that's fine. We've learned a lot about not just your story, but about the adaptive game in general. And I think that this, coupled with some other resources that I know the PDGA has through the event support team and all of that, there's plenty to work with for those of you that might be listening right now and thinking to yourself, you know what? I'm kind of in charge of a course in my area, and you know, nine holes on that course would be friendly, would be adaptive if I did this and that. And I'm not 100% sure how. Well, now there's some resources for you. And, you know, Johan, I want you to end by giving us your contact information in terms of your social channels, because I know we can not only go there and see your videos, but I know now, obviously, how easy it is to get a hold of you. And I'm sure that you've got advice and other things that you can share with other people that might be interested in making their course more adaptive, or putting on an adaptive event,
or learning how to
creating
play.
Maybe a temp course, or learning how to play. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm always very happy to answer any questions that people have about like adaptive play, or just like, also a lot of Americans that come to Berlin on holiday actually will hit me up to ask me about the good local courses and stuff. You can best find me on Instagram. It's just my name or one word, Johannes Kropf. Probably just, or you just look up the hashtag wheelchair disc golf or adaptive disc golf, and there's going to be like probably a few hundred videos of me throwing. So you can definitely find me if you want to.
Has that been maybe the most rewarding part is having other players reach out to you and be like, because of you, I decided that I could do this too?
Yeah, that's definitely like the biggest, probably my happiest moments were like over the last few years, I had probably about like 4 or 5 wheelchair disc golfers, like 3 of them from America who reached out to me. One of them also like who was like freshly injured and who was a disc golfer before. And he like wrote me a message about like, when I had my injury, like when I became a paraplegic, I thought, oh, like, I can't play disc golf anymore. But then like even like lying like just a few weeks after my accident, I was like lying in bed scrolling through Instagram, and like I saw you on my feed, and it's like,
yeah,
I can still play disc golf, like just a little different. Yeah. And that's pretty much one of the main reasons I do my content at all, is just to like, for those few people who are actually like in the same situation as I was like 4 years ago, like not having any resources, not having anybody to connect to, like when there's a new wheelchair disc golfer, I want to be the one who they find that like gives them like a better start than I had to disc golf and a quicker start.
Just that glimmer of hope, because we all need that motivation. But I think, like you said, someone immediately after an injury definitely needs those little pushes to keep going and know that, you know, there's so much more out there. So
And I just think like representation is it's so important for like any minority, like just to see there's other people who like are the same as me in some way doing something that I maybe aspire to do or want to do. And you might not dare to do it, but when you see that there's other people in the same situation as you, like doing this, like it just makes it a lot easier to like do that first step.
And like you mentioned, there's not a better community, I feel like, than the disc golf community. So if you know someone or have a friend or family member, or you are someone who is in a wheelchair, you know, introduce disc golf, go give it a try, because it is a community that loves, I feels like, and accepts and wants to help once their eyes are maybe open, that a few things being adjusted can make this such a great sport for everyone.
Great stuff today. I really appreciate this conversation. I appreciate the little caddy I hear running around in the background too, barking, letting us know they're there. That's awesome. Yeah,
somebody rang the doorbell. He didn't like that.
It doesn't really matter what language, what culture, and when that doorbell rings. Yeah. Well, we appreciate it very much. We want to make sure we repeat one more time. Johannes Krumpf, that's where you search on Instagram to find great content. You can even Google. I Googled wheelchair disc golf. This was about a year ago, to try to find one of your videos, and I found it within about 30 seconds. So even just Googling wheelchair disc golf will get you started if you want to find out more information or if you want to contact Johannes. So Johannes, thanks so much for your time today. We really appreciate it, and we will see you down the road.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for the nice talk and for inviting me.